The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, where they have a huge buyback sale going on through Sunday. Receive up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade. Get to BillCurryFord.com and start shopping. BillCurryFord.com.
No coffee, no bagel. I'm breaking out in a cold sweat. She'd say, Ira, you had more stamina when I knew you in every way. Could be a double cheeseburger, you never know. I'm not abandoning the running game. I'm not doing it. He's going to spit out the sauerkraut. I am still stunned. He's a bit of a nut job. When they crank that thing up, oh, mama.
All right, Ira, you're in your house. You see some water. You smell some mold. What do you do?
What do I do? I call Florida's Elite Restoration pronto. I don't waste any time. Florida's Elite Restoration. Look, there are certain things that go wrong in every house. Mold stands alone in many ways. And if you dilly-dally and waste time about addressing it, you've probably got a major problem on your hands. Alternatively, if you call Florida's Elite Restoration quickly, as you should, then a potential major problem gets handled in a prompt manner, an economical manner, and a quick manner.
And Sage, they will come to you free. They'll talk to you free. It's all free to figure out what's going on. Florida'sElitereStoration.com is the website. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. You can get information there, get all your contact numbers, reach out to them online. Great local company. As you said, Ira, they'll help you with any disaster possible.
Call Florida's Elite Restoration pronto. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is back, presented by Bill Curry Ford. Episode 1 of this week, and the star of the show is the Baron of Big Storm Beer, the King of Pasco County, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Uncle Ira, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the true Sage, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. We are jacked up. We got a lot to talk about. Ira, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm going to start off with a caveat to my two fellow podcasters right now. I want a nice, smooth, gentle, and stress-free podcast. And I'll tell you why. Because tomorrow, I'm traveling to Bruce B. Downs, an area that the Kemper's very familiar with. And I'm going to my cardiologist for my annual stress test. It's a four-hour extravaganza, all kinds of pictures of the Sage's ticker before and after I bounce on that treadmill, where I will try to exceed my record of 8 minutes and 30 seconds. When they crank that thing up, oh, mama, it's a problem. And then they inject some kind of dye. I mean, it's diabolical what they do to me. But then at the end, you know, the cardiologist comes in, and he looks at the pictures, and he says, you're good for another year, Kaufman. Get the hell out of here. So tomorrow's a big day. I got a fast. No coffee, no bagel, gentlemen. Nothing past midnight. I'm already nervous about it. I'm breaking out in a cold sweat. So I don't need you guys adding to my agita. How do you like that, Lee?
I love the word diabolical. It reminds me of the old Batman TV series that was used like once every two or three episodes. Diabolical.
Ira, let's face it. Let's be a little honest here. The best part of the stress test, of the annual stress test for the Sage, the best part is when you're done and the doctor slaps you on the back and says, see you next year, Kaufman. 11 minutes later, you're in that McDonald's drive-thru.
It's not even 11 minutes. There's a Burger King across the street. I am starving when I get the heck out of there. Yeah, I got to have my fill. It could be a double cheeseburger. You never know. Steve, it would be for you to point that out. But I do the fasting. He's got a nurse practitioner over there. I call her the Dragon Lady because she's the one that conducts the treadmill. And it starts off with a nice loping, you know, 1 mile an hour, and I can keep up, and there's no problem. And then after 3 or 4 minutes, she points to the guy and says, crank it up. Oh, my goodness. All of a sudden, I'm Jim Ryan trying to break the 4-minute mile over here, gentlemen? No good.
You know, I last 8-9 minutes. If I had a handkerchief, I'd be waving up the handkerchief. Stop. Can't take it anymore.
Ira, regarding the 8 or 9 minutes, would that impress Muriel Berkowitz, or would she say, Ira, back in the day, you were a little better than that?
She'd say, Ira, you had more stamina when I knew you in every way, and I'd have to agree with her, Steve.
All right. Listen, Bill Curry, Ford, we talk about them all the time, and let's just call it straight, Ira. You're a customer. Lee's a customer. I'm a customer. General manager Sean Sullivan of Bill Curry Ford. He is going to take care of every single Buccaneers fan he can to the best of his ability and even really beyond that. Sean goes the extra mile for everyone. You can email him. It's right on their website, BillCurryFord.com. You can walk in there a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Gorgeous, large dealership, plenty of room for spacing out, social distancing. They'll even bring a vehicle to you to test drive at your home. You can get that all straightened out. If you want to shop online and say, I want to drive that thing, they'll bring it to you. Sanitize it. You go for a ride and all by yourself. And they do everything possible for Tampa area customers at Bill Curry Ford. Family owned for the last 60 years. The Curry family is fantastic. They care. They're on site. BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping. 0% financing for 72 months. Nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. Bill Curry Ford. We love him, Ira.
So we've been to a lot of automobile showrooms in our day, and this one's incomparable. Look, besides the customer service, you got the Big Stone Brewery Cafe. Anything you want. Great food. All kinds of drinks. And if you want to talk a little bucks with Sean Sullivan right before you want to negotiate a deal, he's more than willing. You know, you and I, we all know a lot of Buck fans, and in terms of history and incisiveness, this guy knows his stuff. So there's no reason not to go to that showroom and check it out. It's a real pleasure to get over there.
If someone is interested in a Ford vehicle, and they also want to talk about the Bucks, like, you know, the only person they could talk to all day long is their wife who hates football, you got to talk to someone about the Bucks. Stop in at Bill Curry Ford. If Sean Sullivan is there, and he almost always is, if he's there and you say you want to talk Bucks, that man will make time for you. Sean is, in a good way, obsessive about the Bucks.
That reminds me of Jameis Winston putting on 10 or 15 pounds with the idea, well, he's going to take a lot of punishment this year, so he better be able to absorb it. I hope the same theory isn't about Ronald Jones. Steve, isn't the idea that he avoids punishment? Makes people miss, or am I missing something here, Steven?
Well, Jones gained weight last offseason, and it looks like he's probably put on maybe another 6 pounds. I'm not sure the reason for it. Of course, who knows what he'll actually play at. But with no preseason now, Ira, it's been wiped out. The NFL's offered no preseason games, and that's what the union was looking for. No preseason, no offseason. Lighter on the practice schedule, which we're going to talk about. Ronald Jones jumps into the spotlight. It is just going to be really difficult to count on Keyshawn Vaughn, the rookie running back out of Vanderbilt, for everything they wanted to count on him right away. It's just unrealistic to think they're going to get everything they want at him right out of the gate.
The latest proposal the NFL made about setting up practices and protocols for training camp, the pads won't come on until day 20. Day 20 of training camp is when the pads come on. Your thoughts, Ira?
It's going to be the softest training camp. This is like Club Med over here, gentlemen. They might as well go to Punta Cana or Cancun. You know, look, I'm not wishing anybody gets COVID, but these guys are supposed to be whipped into shape. They got to be ready to play in September 10th. Football's a physical game, gentlemen, by its very nature. You can't mess with the physicality. Otherwise, all is lost. I guess this is a reaction to the situation we're in amidst the pandemic. But it doesn't all go well for crisp football in September. Guys, if I'm a player, I'm loving every minute of this. You know, Lee, on this weight addition thing, he's not supposed to be Derrick Henry over here, Mr. DeKemper.
No.
He's supposed to be, in the words of Dirk Cutter, major pace back, the guy that gives you explosive plays. Am I wrong, Lee, or has his role changed all of a sudden?
Well, unless role change all of a sudden is taking place, you're right. He's supposed to be the quick guy, you know, and a scat back, some would say. I'm starting to rethink my opinion about Ronald Jones. Before I get going here, I'm not saying I expect him to run for 1,000 yards. But when I was doing some research about, yards after catch, and I found out Ronald Jones was like 50th in the NFL, and that shocked me, and I started doing some more research. This guy gets yards after the catch. And I'm thinking, okay, who uses running backs a lot out of the backfield in basketball?
Tom Brady.
He gets a lot of yak. Well, Ronald Jones got a hair under 10. He averaged a hair under 10 yards a catch.
That's a good number.
I have to admit, I had an epiphany. I said, you know what? Maybe this might work out with Ronald Jones. I still don't think he's a good runner. I still don't think he's number one running back. But I'm starting to change my tune a little bit on Ronald Jones. Not so much as a running back, but this might be a good marriage with him and Tom Brady.
Yeah, Steve makes a good point. This particular season, for rookies to make an impact, for bubble players to make an impact, it's very limited. Probably no preseason games. And to Steve's point, who's really going to push Ronald Jones going into that season opener at the Superdome? You draw up a list of guys that have to come through for the 2020 Bucks, and you got to put Ronald Jones in the top three. No question about it.
Get used to saying that name, Ira Ogunbowale. I don't disagree with Lee, except Bruce Arians, who's calling the shots, along with Byron Leftwich, they looked at Ronald Jones last year. They presumably did the self-scouting, watched the film a million times, and decided, we're going to go out there publicly and say, we need an all every down back. We need a David Johnson type. Ronald Jones is not a third down back. These are all words that came from the Bucs officials. So even if he can do it, I'm not sure he's going to get a lot of chances, especially if Ogunbowale does what they think he's going to do, which seems a little wacky to me. But I think he's going to get the first crack at being that guy that Brady resurrects and nobody in the league knows who the hell he is. I'll say this also about Ronald Jones. When you draft a guy who's just 20 years old, and that's how old he was when he was drafted, a guy who's 20 is going to gain some weight. He may even still growing a little bit and is going to put on some man weight. So I don't think it's that weird.
Well, Jones is going to get a full crack, Lee. He will, to earn Brady's trust. It's an open book whether that will happen or not, but he's going to get an opportunity. And if he plays well early in the season, he's going to be the man. But Lee, if he doesn't, if he makes a couple of costly third down drops, screws up a couple of screen passes, which I believe will be resurrected in the Buck playbook, and thank God for that. We ain't seen it in 5 years. I still never figured out why Cutter abandoned it during his 3 years at the helm. Inexplicable to me, but it's incumbent on Ronald Jones to prove himself to Tom Brady. And Lee, catching balls at Berkeley Prep when nobody's going to hit you and nobody's around you is not the same as going into New Orleans and getting plugged by a couple of safeties. So we shall see. But Jones had very little experience catching footballs at Southern Cal. Very, very little. You got to give him credit. He improved in that area quite a bit in his second season. But Brady has certain standards. He's had some great backs in terms of pass catchers. And the jury's still out on Ronald Jones.
Oh, like I said, I'm not convinced he's a decent runner. I mean, if you look at running backs the past 20 years, or in other words, this century, who as rookies had as lousy of a year as Ronald Jones did, that list is grim. That list is grim, especially we all know that rookie running backs usually hit the ground running in the NFL. So if you just go to Pro Football Reference and look at rookie running backs who had less than 75 yards as rookies, it's grim. Bruce Arians has said, you know, Ronald Jones really isn't a third down back. Well, there's a new sheriff in town, and I'm going to ask you about this, Ira. Mark Dominic was on Colin Cowherd's show last week, and among the subjects that were brought up was Brady and the Bucs. And Dominic said that he's heard from his sources inside the building. Of course, he was at the Bucs for some time. I guess he still has friends there, still has contacts. Brady already has a new nickname that people in the building at One Buck Palace that refer to Brady as. because he's absolutely taken over the team. That nickname is Coach Brady. Your thoughts?
I don't think that's an over-exaggeration. There's been nobody like Brady in 100-year history of this league. And I don't care what you think of the Buck coaching staff. They would be very foolish not to rely quite heavily on Brady's two decades of play under a spotlight, six Super Bowl rings. If I'm Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich wants to do situation A and Brady says, I don't think that's going to work. I think I'm more comfortable with this other option. Which way am I going to go if I'm Bruce Arians? With all due respect to Byron Leftwich, who did a decent job last year. I'm not going to blame Leftwich for 30 picks by Jameis Winston. They scored a heck of a lot of points. But still, Brady's unique. Brady's absolutely unique. This is the guy that Arians singled out. He could have went after Philip Rivers. He didn't mention Philip Rivers. He mentioned Brady. He probably thought it was pie in the sky when he mentioned him. But guess what? Pie in the sky's come down to the breakfast table. And not that Brady's calling all the shots. He got Bruce Arians, been around a long time. But you got to give Brady his respect, Steve. You got to respect what the guy wants to do. And if you don't tailor your offense to Tom Brady's strengths, shame on you.
You think Brady, Ira, might just say, hey, you know what? I've got a rhythm here with Ronald Jones. I know it was only practice, but I think he could do some things. Let's use him a little bit more on third down. You think that's a possibility?
I think that would have a huge effect. We've been saying this since March 15th. There's only one Tom Brady, and he affects this franchise on so many levels in terms of enticing and attracting the casual fan. I think that's huge, making this team relevant. I don't think it's an exaggeration, gentlemen, to say that the Bucs have been the most talked about franchise in the National Football League for the last 4 months. I mean, is that an exaggeration?
Ira, you know what? I'm sick of the talk. It was fun for a while. It's over. It's time to win some freaking games. And if you go 1-3, you'll be just as irrelevant again. And you'll be worse than irrelevant because they'll be making fun of you left and right. So I'm sick of it. I'm ready for football, Ira.
But, Steve, the point we're talking about is how much impact Brady's going to have on the actual way this offense is going to look. And I think he's going to have a very significant impact.
Yeah, that was always the case. He was going to come in. Arians himself said, Tom, you can pick the number three receiver. These are quotes from Arians. We have 10 receivers in camp. Pick one or two. You know, these are things that came out of Arians' mouth. You know, the whole staff has said many times that they'll adjust to Brady, and now they're forced to, Ira, with no practice until August. That's been made official, you know, as official as it's going to get until they show up. But, Ira, this is, I think, is important. I want to hear what Lee thinks as well. The way it stands as we speak here, players are supposed to report July 28th, veterans, and they're going to apparently get a coronavirus test and then be quarantined off-site for a couple of days when they'll study online with coaches again. And then they'll come back for another virus test. And if they're negative twice, then they can come in for a team physical. And then that brings you all the way up to August 2nd, which could possibly be the first practice day where they won't have any pads on. Allegedly, for maybe 3 weeks, they'll just be stretching and running and doing conditioning and getting into the weight room and doing various very light OTA type activities. How does all this change everything, Ira? You know, how is this changing everything? We've never seen anything like this in the history of football.
I'll tell you one thing that might change. Ronald Jones might get off to a hell of a start because nobody can tackle anybody in the month of September. He might have a hell of a start. You know, Rondé Barber says tackling stinks in a normal year or early in the season. Can you imagine what's going to happen here? Sloppy football, penalties galore. Hopefully it improves as the season goes on. But as Steve mentioned, it's a season like no other. You know, it affects everybody, even us scrubs of the media. Peter King saying he'd love to come down to Tampa and check out the Brady experiment. He didn't say he was coming, for sure. And normally that'd be a no-brainer. So we shall see, Lee. But the lack of physical contact with pads during the month of August and early September going into the opener, that doesn't bode well for crisp football. Lee, not at all.
No, but at least it'll be the best of the best, meaning you won't see Amazon packers or bartenders or landscapers or high school history teachers playing against each other, okay? And charging full price, too, on top of it. For decades, I hated preseason football, hated. I always thought that was a weak excuse that the NFL, we have to have preseason games or we can't play regular season. Really? How come college can do that? How come high school can do that? NFL's only level of football that they absolutely positively have to have preseason games. That's nonsense. Just get rid of it. And thankfully, it took a friggin' pandemic to get rid of preseason football, hopefully for good. I'm not going to be one of these guys like, bite my fingernails and cry they don't have any preseason games because the first week might be rusty. Baloney.
You know, Steve, here's one of the things I can't fathom. As we're doing this podcast this week and a week before training camp, there's been nothing forthcoming from this franchise whether fans are going to be in the stands, how many fans are going to be in the stands. It's coming out in drips and drabs from other franchises. Steve, did I see something that the Jets and Giants will not have fans at East Rutherford?
That is correct.
So are the Bucks going to be allowed 18,000 and the Giants will have nobody? Is that a competitive advantage? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe not, because we know the Bucks haven't done well at home anyway with fans showing up. But, Lee, where is the policy from this Buck franchise to its fan base?
Well, I think, to be fair, they don't know what the policy is. Didn't the NFL say it's up to local standards? And my guess is they're not getting a straight answer from Jane Castor. So if they don't know what the policy is, it's kind of hard to tell fans what that policy is. And the Bucks are not alone. I mean, there's been a handful of NFL teams that have already come out and said, okay, here's going to be our seating policy for this year. Not all of them. And the Bucks are one of those teams that have not. And, I'm just going to be fair and assume, which I guess shouldn't assume, but I'm just going to assume they don't even know.
I'll tell you the policy. I know the policy. I did find this out, Ira. You ready?
Yeah, baby.
The policy is, same policy I told you back in March. We are not giving up the luxury suite money until they tear it out of our hands. That is why you're not hearing anything. The Buccaneers rely too much on that luxury money because they don't sell out the building in the way that they want to and have, these wildly priced seats all over the stadium. They cling to that money. It's huge money. And they are not about to say, hey, fans, like other teams have, if you want to skip this season, you can just pick up your tickets next year. They're not going to do it until they absolutely have to. And if they only allow in the luxury suite holders and not the regular fans, they'll get blasted. So I think at some point, unless they are told they can't have fans, you'll have the luxury suites full and the rest of the stadium, they'll have another 10,000 fans sprinkled in the masses, the areas for the masses.
Lee, I think it's fair to say, and this is not a political statement, but it's based on recent history, that Florida's governor is not going to stand in the way if the Bucks have full intentions of letting fans in the stadium. I don't think Governor DeSantis is going to be opposed to that.
No, I don't think so either. Like I said, I think it's going to be up to Jane Castor. Or it should be Castor, excuse me. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. By the way, Ira, just to add to the what the Bucks are going to do, as I stated, not every NFL team knows. And for an example, this week, Mark Davis, owner of the Raiders, was asked about fans in the stadium. Now, if anybody's looking for a stadium full of fans, it's him. A brand new home, brand new palace are going to open up. They had plans. That place is going to be packed all year long. And Davis said he didn't know, and he even went so far as to say if he's not allowed to have a full stadium of fans, he himself will not go to any games as a form of solidarity to the Raiders fans.
I'm astounded at that. Now, look, Davis is a maverick, not as much as his father. He's a bit of a nut job. Who else gives a coach a contract like he gave John Gruden, who was barely over 500? For his book career. I mean, those are facts.
Ira, nobody has seen that contract. Stop believing everything you hear. Nobody has seen it.
Well, it's lucrative. Let's just use that word, lucrative. I think that's a ridiculous statement. by Mark Davis.
That he won't go to games unless the stadiums are full?
Well, I mean, I understand, you know, how upset he would be.
He's not saying it in anger. He's saying, like, you know, I feel awful for the fans if they can't come here. And he said, you know, if I can't have a full stadium, I'm going to be like those fans. I won't come here either. There's more of a form of solidarity. So, you know, I understand your frustrations. I feel you. I'd love to have a stadium full of fans. And it wasn't really anger or taking shots at the city fathers of Las Vegas or the state leaders. It was nothing like that. It was empathetic to the fans.
Davis wants to be the first guy that's standing outside that locker room after a Raider victory, high-fiving those guys. And I don't think he would follow up and fulfill that vow once the season actually started. It sounds good, Steve. Sounds good. Maybe he thinks that puts pressure on the locals in Vegas to open up the turnstiles, but I don't see him following through on that. You know, what owner doesn't want to go to his home games? I mean, come on. What's going on here?
Well, if there's no fans, it does sort of change the feel, Ira. You know, maybe the guy wants to sit across the street in team headquarters with a bunch of showgirls and watch on a big screen. You know? give the guy a break. Right, Ira, listen.
That stadium's going to be fantastic. It is going to be fantastic.
A couple of things, Ira. Now, listen. First of all, I wanted to mention this. We already talked about it, but I think it's just a funny note to cap it off. Last year, Maurice Jones-Drew, who writes for NFL.com and is on the network, he ranked all the starting running backs in the league based on how he thought they would perform. He ranked Rojo number 32 last year. This year, he put out the same list and explanation. For the second year in a row, he ranked Rojo number 32. That's hard to do. Very hard. It's like Doug Martin getting back-to-back 2.9 yards a carry. That's tough stuff. Just an interesting nugget, if nothing else. But, Sage, I got to get into this with you because this whole no practicing, right? They're really not going to put on pads the way it stands now till maybe August 21st. And you were talking about sloppy tackling, and this is goes to game day, these early games, which are going to be critical. You were saying, you know, maybe Rojo should get the ball, sloppy tackling, he's going to break free, whatever. Guys, I'm asking you this. If the tackling we can assume is sloppy, and Derek Brooks would say it was sloppy anyway for the first few weeks, if it's sloppy tackling, don't you want the ball in the hands of Gronk and Chris Godwin? Those guys are animals. They're yak animals.
Well, I want a chance to build Jones's confidence, which was a big problem his rookie season, at least according to him, a god-awful rookie season. One of the worst rookie seasons in my memory. I am still stunned by that 1.9 average. 1.9. I think DeKemper might be able to do better. 1.9. And by the way, Steve, are you saying that after the 1.9 rookie season, he still was ranked in among the top 32 running backs in the league? Are you saying that? After the 1.9?
Jones-Drew had decided who he thought would be the number one running back. So he had evaluated Peyton Barber.
Oh, okay, okay.
And he thought Jones would break through as the starter last year, but still be the 32nd best in the league.
Okay, so he was ranking the starting backs. He's got to have 32 backs. I understand that. But, no, Steve, look, you got to have a running game. You absolutely have to have a running game, especially Tom Brady has to have a running game. You're right, your point about Brady not coming here to hand the ball off, but still, with his lack of mobility, his age, his importance to the team, the lack of a real, you know, proven backup, and yes, I'm talking about you, gentlemen, Mr. Gabbert, and Griffin, yes, I am talking about you. You still have to have a decent running game. He's great at the play action, but it's not going to work if teams don't respect you. So I'm giving Jones the ball 15 times in New Orleans, and I don't care if they're 10 points behind in the middle of the second quarter. I'm not abandoning the running game. I'm not doing it. And give him a shot, because I want to find out if I need to go out there and get somebody else. I want to know what I got. Last year was all about Jameis Winston. This year, to a degree, It's about Ronald Jones.
Oh!
How do you like that, Lee? How do you like that?
That's a hell of a statement. But you know what? This may sound like I'm getting off track, and I'm not. You know, I know Bucks fans are frustrated because of the running backs the Bucks have passed on in the draft the last few years. Quite a lot of good running backs. And also, and I'm sure we're going to get into Michael Bennett, the Bucks have, and it drives Bucks fans nuts, and me too to a degree, that the Bucks have drafted more kickers in recent years than they have edge rushers. And what I'm getting at is there's kind of the piece of the puzzle to figure out about that, why the Bucks have all but ignored edge rushers and pretty much have put running backs on the back burner. Daniel Jeremiah kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit. He's starting to do a bunch of videos. He's got a YouTube channel now. And he's starting to do a bunch of videos where he breaks down, you know, football plays and players and things of this nature. Somebody, a former scout in the NFL that Jeremiah used to work with, gave him his notes of Bill Belichick. Belichick, of course, was the coach of the Browns. And this guy was with the Browns, and Belichick had a scouting meeting. And he went over with scouts. He had sort of a lecture. And he went over with scouts what he's looking for in players and what value they should put at certain positions. And Jeremiah was going through these notes. Absolutely fascinating, because this is coming straight from the mouth of Bill Belichick. And when it comes to the defensive line, Belichick puts a lot more stock in the tackles than he does ends. In this guy's notes, he's quoting Belichick from these notes. A lot of people always think edge rushers are more important than tackles. Not only do tackles stop the run in the middle, they have a better shot at getting to the quarterback. Well, look what Jason Light has been doing. He doesn't get edge rushers, but he's been getting tackles. Then at running back, Belichick said, and you guys have heard this before, and this drives you bananas, but it's Belichick. A running back's ability to catch the ball is more important, or his ability to catch the ball and block is more important than running. Well, look what Light's done with his running backs. They're all pass catchers. Who did Light used to work for? Who was he in the personnel department with at one time? Bill Belichick.
Well, they did draft Jones, Lee, when he had...
Second round.
He had no history of as a pass catcher at a USC. He didn't.
That's true, and that's it. The rest of them, you know, what can you say?
You know,
I mean,
Steve,
Snoop Dogg McClaybook, come on.
Steve, here's a point that Lee just touched on, which we should not overlook, Steve, and I hope this doesn't happen. All three of us hope this doesn't happen. But I'm thinking about this pass defense, and they had all kinds of problems for most of last year through 10 games, all kinds of problems. And, Steve, for the most part, the pass rush was pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. On a percentage basis, I believe the Bucks led the league in quarterback hits. Mm. And their sack total wasn't too shabby either, Steve. So I guess what I'm getting to is, you know, besides the threat of injuries, which the Bucks have been a little fortunate about, they have been on the offensive and defensive lines in the last few years. Now you got the specter of the coronavirus, could knock a guy out for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and that's in a good scenario, you know, assuming the guy makes a fairly rapid recovery. And, Steve, if it hits you in terms of the pass rush, whether it's Barrett or JPP, that's a real problem, Steve, because if the pass rush should diminish, that will leave the secondary, this very young secondary, and an unproven one, more exposed. Guys, that is a concern now with the COVID. It's like an extra layer of you better have some depth up there. And Lee points out that they have not done a good job of drafting these guys to stockpile them.
All right, Ira, come on now. Come on. You're driving me insane here, Ira. Absolutely insane. Here's my attitude toward the COVID, okay? It should affect every team equally. So you know what? You're right, Ira. If JPP has the COVID, and so do two other linemen because they hang out a lot together, and the pass rush is wiped out, it's a disaster. I might not even want to watch, but that should happen to every team across the league. So it really should all even out. It really should, no matter what, even out across the league with these virus infections.
Well, but Steve, my point is that some teams have more depth up front than the Bucks do. That's all I'm saying.
Some teams, not many.
Yeah.
You know, what do the Saints do if Cam Jordan, gets the virus, and so does their number three defensive tackle who plays a third of the snaps? I mean, they're not the same team either. So, I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
All right, Sage. Now, listen, I have exciting news, very exciting news. Now, we talk about Big Storm Beer and that they're Florida's best craft beer. They have their giant flagship location in Clearwater, just south of Ulmerton Road, and they also have one Success Drive in Newport Richey. But Ira, the construction, the final phase has kicked in Clearwater. 3,500 square feet of covered outdoor space with artificial turf, bars, TVs, bathrooms outside. They're not open. They won't watch you go to the bathroom, Ira, but everything's outdoors. Everything's covered. And they've got a fire pit. So when you're watching the games there all season long with Ira, if the Bucks choke, you can just take your jersey off and burn it right there. And this is just going to be such the best place to watch games this season, not only because you're going to be there, Ira, and not only because of the incredible Big Storm beer and the food, but outdoors, 3,500 square feet of covered outdoor space, comfortable, lots of fresh air. You know, nobody wants to be inside for hours with a packed house of people in these times. And this is just going to be the perfect place to watch games.
I'm looking forward to it, Steve. I think this outdoor edition is apropos, and I think will absolutely enhance the whole experience. I'm looking forward to meeting our members of Buck Nation. I've done it for years. I look forward to it. If the Bucks play as well as we think they will, it's going to be a joy to watch them go to New Orleans and get off to a good start.
Get to BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com. You can order food online. You can order... they deliver. You can order hand sanitizer. They make it medical grade and bottle it. It's at all the tap rooms in person, or you can order it online. They'll ship it to you. And, of course, check out all the beers and find out where you can buy it near you all across Florida. Big Storm Beer, that is the beer to drink. And, Ira, the best news ever. Lee, you ready for this?
Okay.
Welcome in the new Big Storm outdoor area that should be done in about 3 weeks or so. And they're open for business now. This is just the outdoor area being constructed. But when they're open and ready outside, dogs will be welcome. We absolutely are going to bring your wife out, and she's going to have Cosmo with her, and people are going to come out and be able to get pictures with Cosmo. We're going to have a special Cosmo day.
All right. Now, rule number one, easy on feeding Cosmo to Ruben. Easy on the Ruben. He's going to spit out the sauerkraut. He's not into sauerkraut. And so a word to the wise. But, boy, is he going to be excited by being surrounded by all kinds of Buck fans. I got some new outfits I'm going to show up on. And you know what, Steve? We're not above having some special guests either. So that could happen. Now, Steve, this outside edition, that's the Clearwater location, am I correct?
Yeah,
the
covered, Clearwater location. Covered seating, yep. 49th Street, right by the jail, south of Ulmerton. All right, Sage, Ira, now, yes, the depth concerns are real. I was just playing with you a little bit, Ira. I just think they're real for every team, no matter how you slice it. I mean, imagine if the Falcons, let's say the Bucks, they play the Falcons 2 out of 3 games late in the season. Let's say the Falcons lose Alex Mack and a backup lineman to the virus, and he misses both games against the Bucks. The Bucks should dominate those games without Alex Mack there. But, you know, who knows what's going on. So it should all even out. This is just going to be one crazy season to bet on.
Steve, I want to make one quick point to Buck Nation over here. We understand the affinity, the love for the Buccaneers, and everybody understands that. But one of the reasons that Joe Bucks fan is the go-to site for Buck information, opinion, and facts is that we're as objective as we can be. We pride ourselves on it. And to that point, Steve, and you may not agree, guys, you may not agree, but I've noticed a few things where people are putting up charts, NFL.com or whatever, trying to rank the wide receivers, ranking the NFL wide receivers, and, you know, people are seeing Michael Thomas, either he's one, he's two, he's three, and like, people, some Buck fans are taking pot shots at Michael Thomas. Let me say this up front. Michael Thomas just turned in a historic season with very little around him at the wide receiver position in New Orleans. They got a pretty good tight end in Jared Cook. The last time I looked, they did not have Chris Godwin to partner with Mike Evans. They didn't have that. Everybody knew where the ball was going. They couldn't stop the guy. He averaged 9 or 10 catches a game. He kept moving the chains every week. He never got held below 5 catches. He never had a bad game. So it doesn't look good for Buck Nation to take pot shots at Michael Thomas and argue that, oh, Evans and Godwin both should be ranked over Michael Thomas. Don't knock Michael Thomas, gentlemen. The guy is a fantastic football player.
I hear you, Ira. I think some of that comes back to the Jameis haters that are out there in a roundabout way, because they'll say that, well, look who's throwing him the ball, the most accurate quarterback in history, and look at Jameis, the most inconsistent quarterback of the modern era. And I think that that plays to some of that. But I agree with you.
I'm glad you put that. I'm glad you made that point, Steve, because let's say it right now. For 5 weeks, and I believe Bridgewater was 5-0 during those 5 weeks, his production never varied. It never wavered, Lee. So I'm not buying the Breeze argument. Look, Breeze is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's not as good as he was 10 years ago, but he's still damn good. But Drew Brees is not making Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas isn't making Drew Brees. They're both fantastic players. Lee, the guy caught 150 balls. You can't get around that.
Michael Thomas is darn good. Boy, doesn't he light up the Bucs.
Oh, he kills the Bucs. Kills them.
Him and Julio.
And Lee, we still remember that game. What was it, 3 years ago? Julio Jones just going absolutely nuts. You and I in the press box in Atlanta. We're turning to each other. Can't anybody cover this guy? They got Ryan Smith on him.
Ryan Smith.
They won't move Grimes. They won't move Grimes on him. Oh, my God. Can you imagine what Buck fans were saying that day? Oh, my God.
I'm surprised Mike Smith lasted after that. I mean, I really am. He wouldn't roll Brent Grimes. If I remember, I was having a pretty good year.
He was.
He wouldn't roll Brent Grimes onto Julio. Instead, he has Ryan Smith. And then Cutter tried to say later, or was it Mike Smith, that they had 20 different packages. None of them had Brent Grimes lining up on Julio. Well, you should have had 21 then, Mike.
What about
Steve, didn't Mike Smith say after the game when he was asked about the Brent Grimes situation that, we didn't know where Julio was going to line up. I can't put Brent Grimes. What kind of crazy answer was that, Steve?
Yeah, with the 17 coverages that they had, why couldn't they pick the one that involves just actually staying within 2 yards of the guy? I mean, Come on. Come on now. Ira, you know, I quibble with your word choice here because you said we're objective. I'm not objective. I'll say that right now. I am not objective. I'm a Bucs fan. I'm not objective. I look at the team through a fan lens. My assessments are objective in the sense that I don't have an axe to grind against any of these players. But am I objective? Absolutely not, and I don't strive to be. So I just want to make that clear.
But you'll give other players credit, Steve. You'll give other players credit, like a Michael Thomas.
Like you said, caught 150 balls. 150 balls.
Yeah.
That's almost double Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
I think I'm subjective. I try to have an open mind, but my opinions are my opinions. However, and I emphasize this, I try to have an open mind. If I see something that I think is good, I'm going to write about it. If I think I see something that sucks, I'm going to write it sucks. I'll never forget the very first time I ever wrote a sports story for a newspaper. My editor at the time, his advice was very simple. Write what you see. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad.
Yes.
And I thought, now, just to give you an idea about how I try to have an open mind, I don't think anyone's had a critic of Ronald Jones as harsh as I've been on that. And on this very podcast, did I not say I'm starting to rethink things because of his yak? I think that's having an open mind.
And we all acknowledge, guys, we all acknowledge that the better the team does, the better the website and the more popular the podcasts are. We understand that. We understand that.
Ira, this team could lose 7,000 games and your popularity would not wane. Not one inch, Ira.
Thank you, my man.
That's just the sage for you. All right, now listen, Ira. Very important here. Lee sent me some statistical gibberish from Tom Bassinger via Football Outsiders. And, these are things that that Bassinger wrote for this almanac, which is a great resource, a lot of interesting data, where it all comes from, exactly who's doing all the assessments or is not always 100% clear, but they're a wonderful outfit.
It's great bedside reading for Mr. DeKemper. Tremendous bedside reading for DeKemper.
And Bassinger is one of their, basically handles the Bucks for them and produces all sorts of stuff. Now, I'm going to run down these three. You got to answer these quickly, otherwise it's no fun, okay? I'm going to run these three past you. Some statistical chatter. And you can maybe say you agree, disagree, real, not real, fake news, whatever you want to scream is fine. So Bassinger says that Donovan Smith, it's important to note that he's essentially entering a contract year, assuming he plays, because it's his last year of guaranteed money. And Don Smith, as we've talked about here, he had a sneaky good 2019, maybe his best season. And Bassinger, these are his words, his best season yet in pass protection. He averaged 56 snaps per blown block, which ranked fifth among left tackles, improving quite a bit. He was 25th there in 2018. What do you make of those?
Shame on you, TB. Shame. One missed block for every 56 snaps? What games is Bassinger watching over here? Tom, I love you like a brother. But look, he's not bad in pass protection. I never said he was. I think he's a lousy run blocker, or has been up to this point, and I think he's okay in pass protection, which I think is more important for a left tackle. I grant you that. But this one blown block in 56 snaps, I mean, that's like almost one missed block a game. I'm not buying that. Move on, Bassinger. Move on.
All right. Let's go to the other tidbit here. Bassinger writes, Buccaneers are one of five teams last year to have four linemen play at least 1,000 snaps. They're the only team to have four linemen play that many snaps in consecutive seasons, but what Bassinger doesn't note is that they were different linemen playing those snaps in consecutive seasons, meaning that in 2018, Caleb Benenock was the guy anchoring and getting 1,000 snaps at right guard. But he goes on to say Smith has played at least 1,000 snaps in all of his seasons. And with this offseason of no workouts and light, the whole deal of this messy offseason and preseason, Tampa Bay's continuity could prove to be a greater advantage than usual.
To that I say bravo, Bassinger. You've made my point that I've made on this podcast many times, and you've reinforced it, which is the Bucks have been incredibly fortunate in terms of continuity for their starting offensive linemen. Granted, the starters might change from year to year, but I'm talking about once week one is established, they've had tremendous health up front, which there's no guarantee that's going to continue, and you don't have to make in-season adjustments and test your depth, which is a big, big problem for most teams. So thank you, Bassinger, for backing me up.
Lee, your thoughts on those first two nuggets?
The Donovan Smith is interesting, but I will have to say NFL general managers and suits and coaches, they go nuts about anything to do with blocking by, Football Outsiders, although they respect them more, or the PFF tribe, because they always say, how do these guys know what their assignments are?
Right.
And I think that's a very, very valid point. So if you're saying, it doesn't have to be Donovan Smith. It could be anybody. If the guy's only blowing one block out of 50-some snaps, how do we know those 50-some snaps, 56 snaps, every one of them were Smith's responsibility?
Yep. So I got to be fair about that. But I will say that that sheds a better light on Smith. Let's say it's one block out of 30. Well, that's not so bad.
That's two a game or something. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I've always said that Donovan Smith is near as bad as what people make him out to be. And these stats seem to back me up. Now, the second one, you know, Ira's been saying this for a long while about the offensive line. You know, even last year at this time, Ira was talking about, hey, these guys never missed a snap last year or rarely missed a snap last year. You can't reasonably expect that to happen this year. But it did happen. So are the law of averages going to catch up with the Bucs? And is someone going to go down and miss a few games? That remains to be seen. But that's very interesting that they had such consistency of health for 2 years running.
Absolutely right.
My thought on the latter one, Ira, with the consistent snaps, I knew that was going to make you excited because you've brought that up so many times in different ways over the years. And the Bucs have had a lot of good fortune health-wise on their O-line. But the 1,000 snaps thing, is there really much of a difference between a team having four guys play 827 snaps versus 1,000? I mean, is that really some sort of big change in continuity? I don't know how much the 1,000 mark really makes a difference.
Right.
You know, I look at the Bucs as if Brady's going to change some things, then that's going to change some things on the offensive line. And that's what I worry about a little bit, because change is change. And the continuity we're talking about is in sort of running the same offense and the same type of stuff. Depending on how many changes Brady makes, that could affect the offensive line. And, of course, we got Wirfs there. But the Bucs O-line, I'm not too worried about them. Unless, like you said, the depth, we've talked about this before, the depth is not good. And Ira, I'll ask you, what are the odds? Give me a percentage, let's say 1 to 10, 10 being likely, 0 being unlikely. What are the odds that Damar Dotson is on this roster this year? What number would you put on that, 1 to 10? And same thing for Earl Watford, two guys who know the offense.
2 for Dotson, Watford. 1. Watford 1. Yeah, I think the addition of Joe Haig and, of course, Wirfs, it changes the dynamics up front. Haig's a solid backup, and I think Arians is going to have trust in him. They wouldn't have went out and got him if they didn't think he could do the job in a pinch. He's not going to win the right tackle job. He's not going to win the right guard job. And I don't think he'll be the left tackle if Donovan Smith doesn't show up. But he's a swing guy at a lot of positions. He's very versatile. So I'm saying 2 for Dotson, 1 for the Earl of Watford.
All right. And this last nugget from Bassinger, and this goes to the really just what we talked about with Donovan Smith, Ira. So you'll give me your fake news, real news, whatever your take is. Alex Kappa, inconsistent in his first year as a starter, allowing the most blown blocks on the team and ranking 81st among 106 interior linemen in blown blocks per snap, and Bassinger suggests that he could lose snaps to Haig at right guard.
I don't think they're ready to give up on Kappa. I think there's an 8. The number is 8 on Kappa being the right guard all season, unless he's injured. Look, he's a third-round pick. I don't think he was disappointing in 2019 in his first year as a starter. I didn't hear his name much, which to me is significant in terms of penalties. Yeah, he can do a better job than pass protection and the run game, but he's nasty, which some of those guys up front are not, Keeley. And I think he'll work well with Wirfs. I think there are a couple of maulers on the right side. I think his job is secure.
An end of an era has come, Ira. And it's worth mentioning because we haven't really, although Lee and I have written and talked about this forever.
I'm not going anywhere, Isbitz. I'm not going anywhere.
I don't know if we've really even, really, it's been ages, if at all, that we've dived into this with you, Ira. But Michael Bennett has retired.
Yes.
And breakthrough, strong season, 27 years old. He was dynamic against the run, with the league's number one ranked Buccaneers run defense in 2012. He was great against and pass rush that year. He'd rush inside, outside. He didn't have JPP on the other side of him. He had Daniel Teo Neshim. And he had 27 years old, and the Bucks let him walk out the door for no logical reason whatsoever. He wanted to stay. He goes to Seattle on a one-year contract, wins the Super Bowl immediately, and the following year should have won his second consecutive Super Bowl and was arguably the MVP in that game if they had won it. And if they had won that game, Ira, back-to-back Super Bowls, I think Bennett would have a much better shot at the Hall of Fame just for being the number one guy in the trenches on a dominant defense that won back-to-back Super Bowls. But he went on to three Pro Bowls, did it with multiple teams as far as his career progressed, and he played well. And he's done now. Where does the Michael Bennett situation lie in Buccaneers history, considering it took 5 years to replace him when they finally found JPP? And what happened back then that they allowed this guy to walk, in your view, as the sage?
You did a very good job, Steve, of putting Bennett's career in context, especially what you said about the game against New England, the Super Bowl game. I was there. He was basically unblockable for about three quarters. And finally, you know, I could just see Belichick going to his Scarnecchia and saying, are we going to block Michael Bennett, or we're not going to block him tonight? And then they started putting two guys on him, and Brady went crazy in the fourth quarter. I believe he was 10 for 10 in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
against a very good Seattle defense. Just another chapter in Brady's glorious career. But what I loved about Bennett, and you mentioned it, he was tremendously versatile. He could play left end, right end, and he could shift inside, and he wasn't overly big. You'd think he'd be overpowered a little bit inside and get caught up in the trash, but he was a very good player. He's not going to make Canton. He's not going to have a bust in Canton. He doesn't have the numbers, but it was a terrible move. Lee, a terrible move by the Bucks. He was on the brink of stardom. They didn't realize what they had. Now, look, he wasn't a milquetoast character in terms of his personality. He was a little bit of a rabble rouser. He had strong opinions, and he didn't keep them to themselves. He wanted to be paid. All those were factors, but the Bucks made a big, big mistake in terms of talent evaluation. You know, you cut your best players a little bit of slack, Lee, in terms of salary, and if they're outspoken, which Bennett certainly is. But I don't think he was disruptive. He wanted to win. He was playing on a loser. He wanted to win. And they let him go, and he becomes the linchpin, along with the Legion of Boom, of a really top-notch Seattle defense. And he was their best defensive lineman for 3-4 years. The Bucks didn't recover for a long, long time. Terrible, terrible decision.
That was probably the worst decision the organization had made since Doug Williams.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, that bad. And just show you what, I can't think of their general manager's name, but Pete Carroll also is a heavy hitter there, we all know, and what kind of sharp eyes they have. Their two best defensive linemen for about 3 or 4 years running was Michael Bennett and Jay Avril. Where did Avril come from? The Lions let him go.
Mm.
The Lions and the Bucks are notorious losers.
That's Cliff Avril. Cliff Avril.
Cliff Avril. What is it? Jay Avril's a lawyer in Clearwater. He's one of that. So I goofed up there, but yeah, Cliff Avril. And where did he come from? The Lions. What are the Lions known for? Losing. Bennett came from the Bucks. What are the Bucks known for? Losing. You see the connection there?
Yes,
you see
I do.
I'm getting that? I have never been able to get anyone on the record as to why Bennett wasn't signed. It wasn't for that much money, and Bennett made it clear, especially to me, and later to Steve, he wanted to stay here in Tampa Bay. He liked it. He's related to Gerald McCoy, if I remember right, is he not, Steve? Bennett's wife and McCoy's wife are best friends or something.
Yeah,
there's
not,
some connection
not
between the two.
Not related, but at the time, and maybe they still are, but at the time, literally, Ira, Bennett's wife and McCoy's wife were best friends?
Well, I'll just go ahead and say this. Like I said, I've never been able to confirm it. I cannot get anybody on the record to talk, but someone who was in the room when the decision was made about Bennett, the highest reaches of One Buck Powell's. And when I say highest reaches, I don't think anybody needs to do any math who I'm referring to. Someone with the first or last name that starts with G told Mark Dominic, "You drafted Daquan Bowers. It's time for him to take over." Now, if that's true or not, I cannot confirm. That's what I heard from someone who was in the room at the time the decision was made. I've heard other people say it was Shannon's call. I can't confirm that.
Maybe they thought he had a disruptive personality. He's very outspoken, no question about it. And if Daquan Bowers had shown Steve an inkling of what he was drafted for, maybe we wouldn't be having this discussion. So it's a double whammy. You didn't know what you had in Bennett, and you thought you had something in Bowers, who, by the way, I think he's still on Twitter all the time, and I feel like replying to some of his tweets like, "Hey, how'd you like the money you stole from this organization, DQ?" But
isn't he coaching at Clemson? Is he an assistant coach at Clemson?
Could be, but Steve, you know, Lee called it the worst decision since Doug Williams. Now that's 25. That's a 25-year gap from like 78. That's, you know, you got the Bo Jackson fiasco. I mean, there's plenty of candidates, right?
That was
Steve?
Bad too. Yeah,
plenty of candidates for this franchise, but you know, boy, you wonder if the Buck pass would have been a little different with Michael Bennett coming off the left edge or right edge.
Yeah, the only X factor in the mystery of Bennett is he did only sign a one-year deal with Seattle because he had to have off-season shoulder surgery. So
yes.
You got to give that, you got to at least put that out there in the mix. However, he didn't miss a game in 2012 with the Bucks, and he didn't miss a game the following year when he left. So, you know, you got to be able to assess this stuff as an organization, and they, better than anyone, should have known what they had, and they screwed it up. I still can't get over, Ira, I just got a little sick to my stomach, Ira. I still can't get over Lovie Smith sitting down with the Glazers and them saying, "Lovie, welcome, we love you. What are we doing at quarterback?" And he looks him in the face and says, "Josh McCown." I still don't understand how that happens. I don't understand how Jason Light, even though he just got the job, didn't stand up and say, "Can we all wake up? Can we please snap out of this bad dream?" When you got,
he should have got his, walking papers right then and there, Steve.
Drew Brees in his prime, Cam Newton in his prime, Matt Ryan in his prime, and Lovie Smith looks ownership in the face and says, "Josh McCown's a guy."
Well, I have a much more egregious personnel move that Lovie made, and it's worse than Josh McCown. They just spent a first-round pick to get a Hall of Fame cornerback. Lovie walks in and says, "Darrell Revis can't play for him." At that point, someone in the Glazer family says, "Look, we can find another coach a hell of a lot easier when you find a Hall of Fame corner. You either learn to figure out how he can play for you, or I will find another coach. Your call." That to me, was much more egregious than Josh McCown. That was,
you know,
much more egregious. Now, real quick, Ira, I want your feedback on this. About Bennett, I know you and Steve both said that possibly his personality paved the way for him to leave Tampa. Well, when has the Glazer family ever shied away from players with personality? Son of a gun, in the first decade of this century, that team was loaded with personalities. Keyshawn, Simeon, Warren Sapp, you name it. That locker room was full of personality. So I don't buy that, you know, Michael Bennett rubbed people the wrong way with his personality. His personality wasn't even close to Keyshawn's, wasn't close to Sapp's, wasn't close to Simeon Rice's. So I don't necessarily buy that.
That's a fair point, Lee. Maybe they didn't put Bennett's skills and talent and impact in the same category as a Simeon Rice.
Okay, that's fair.
And I'm not saying he's as good as Simeon Rice. I'm not. But he was damn good. He was damn good.
All right, Sage. Now, look, we are excited because we have another podcast coming this week, and we're always excited about Bill Curry Ford, where you can shop right now, BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E. Fantastic offers. Get there, BillCurryFord.com. Sage.com. They present all of the Sage's work. And Ira, you know, things are going to be a little delayed as far as media getting out to $1 and sniffing around. And of course, if you get out there, Ira, you're going to have to wear a mask. You're going to have to stay 6 feet away from all your good media friends that you schmooze with. It's going to suck in a lot of ways, but we don't know what happens next. But you know what? We will be committed to just giving Bucks fans the best we can and the most interesting that we can. As you enter, Ira, as you're about to enter your fifth year with JoeBucksFan.com, your four-year anniversary is coming up, and then you'll step into your fifth year. Does it trouble you, Ira, that it looks like when you walk away from this thing, you're going to be able to say, you know what, 12, 13% of my career, maybe 15%, depending on when you walk away, Ira, I spent with JoeBucksFan.com.
You know, the word is liberating, gentlemen. And you guys told me in the summer of 2016 that this is going to be a whole different realm for you, Ira. You're going to be unfettered. You're going to be liberated. You got all this knowledge, and you've been wrapped up with tight editors at the Tribune. No, you can't say that. You can't say this. And I got to say, 4 years later, you've made good on the promise. And I think it's been a successful marriage, at least from my point of view. I hope you boys aren't disappointed. Steve, I guess this week coming up kind of is an anniversary. I'm not sure the exact date, but we will start the fifth year of this partnership. It's been one heck of a rollicking good time from my perspective. And I hope Buck fans have appreciated my contributions.
Ira, send us out of here with some wisdom for Bucks fans in these ever-changing times. What do we need to know?
I'm going to tell you how the Bucks are going to affect me this week, because when I go on that treadmill, for that stress test, and that nurse practitioner nods to the guy that's controlling the knobs on that treadmill and says, crank it, and I'm going a mile a minute, you know what's going to keep me going? Thinking about Tom Brady arching nice long passes to Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Ronald Jones dodging tacklers at the line of scrimmage and Vita Vea shedding a double team. I'm going to be thinking about Buck fortunes. And by the way, Steve, I guess we have to do our predictions this week on a later podcast. You promised Buck Nation about that, Steve. So that's going to keep me going on that stress test, Lee, and I'm going to make a new personal best because my adrenaline will be pumping with Buck fever.